rolling.
And what's this shit?
Prepare for a Gopher football knowledge bomb. This is the FBT podcast with hosts MV.
Oh, that's pretty damn good. I like it. That's pretty good.
Everybody, we won. Where's all the negativity now? Anyone? Crickets? Are we going to complain about how we gave up? There was only a 16-point margin to victory, and that the sirens went off. Is that the take that we're going to complain about? What's up, everybody? This is the FBT podcast. I'm your host MV. I'm back with Frothy.
What up?
And yep, we're one step closer to fringe bowl team eligibility. As the name of this site indicates, we pretty much whipped Purdue for about 2.5 quarters and then went into cruise control mode. And yet, I sense people aren't going to take this victory for what it is in the grand scheme of things. Would you agree with that take, Frothy?
Yeah, I would. I think that people are responding a little bit more sensibly this week than they were last week. Last week, we went from, before the Wisconsin game, we've got a chance to win. After the Wisconsin game, it was, this team is so deeply flawed that we really have to begin questioning the direction that the program is going. And I've got to say, going into the Purdue game, I said to my wife before I left in the morning, that if we lost this game, I would just start to feel a little bit concerned about the direction that things were headed. I thought Purdue was a pretty beatable team. As we discussed, I think last week or the week before, teams that are big road dogs that go very, very closely up against a ranked team, as Purdue did against Ohio State the week before, are almost always up for a big letdown loss the following week. So we were well primed. I think the planets had aligned to give us a pretty good chance of winning that game. And I was going to be a little bit concerned if we dropped that one. I think you made some good points on Twitter last week about the first 19 games that a coach has and how Kill was pretty consistent with what Mason and Brewster and some of the coaches before that had done. And it was really going to be the next 19 games that would dictate really how successful Kill was going to be going forward, because it's really that first 3 years, that 3 or 4 years, that can indicate the total path that a coach takes. So I would have been a little bit concerned if we would have dropped that game. I see now that, obviously we smoked them, and I think that people in general, columnists to some extent, but the Gopher Intertrons are responding like, this is a good win. We really have a shot to beat Michigan now. I think we'll spend some time talking about that a little bit later and whether or not we feel like Denard is going to go, since he has a nerve injury to his elbow, and the effect that Denard is going to have on that game, whether he plays or not. But I feel really good about the win yesterday, man. I think that first half was the most complete half of Gopher football I've seen in quite some time. I think Nate Sandell tweeted yesterday that it was the first time that the Gophers had scored touchdowns on 4 consecutive drives since 2006 or 2007. That's a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
Certainly scoring 4 touchdowns consecutively is not something that's easy to do. But so I'm happy that we did it and I feel pretty good. But Philip Nelson, wow, what a game. I think it's, and we'll talk about this a little bit, I think it's a little bit too early to say he's proven he's the guy. He's going to be, I think I said something to the extent of he's going to change his name. He should change the pronunciation of his name to rhyme with Heisman, like Joe Theismann did many, many years ago. I think it's a little bit too early. He's a young guy. He's going to have his ups and downs. So I think he already is the Mankato Jesus, but let's not, elevate him to deity status at this point. But I feel pretty good. I think that first half was fantastic. I think we saw an improved running game in the second half, the third quarter notwithstanding, really able to control the clock in the fourth quarter. And again, dealing with a very, very young patchwork set of offensive linemen, I think we're getting them all the experience in the world. So next year, where we don't lose a single offensive lineman, I think next year we're really starting to look like we're going to have a good offensive line. These backups are coming together. They're gelling. I really don't have any negatives to take away. People may point to the second half and say we kind of let the foot off the gas a little bit. Some concerns there, but I don't take anything but positives away, but qualified positives, taking this game for what it's worth.
Yeah, and that's the sensible approach to take about all of this. You know, another thing, too, that people probably should consider is Purdue made some adjustments as well. I mean, they clearly went from the Gopher offense saw something on film where their corners were biting on those slant routes very hard, and they obviously had seen the Wisconsin footage where almost everything that Nelson was doing was really quick and really short, you know, slants and outs, and then they took advantage of that to the nth degree when they bit on at least two of those touchdowns. Those were on slant and goes, and give Purdue's defense a little bit of credit that once they realize that, oh man, we're really vulnerable in this area and that they're just going to bomb it over the top of us, and this true freshman quarterback isn't going to be rattled by pressure. He's going to be able to hit these guys when they're wide open. That they switched to more sort of over the top and they made everything go in front of them. And granted, by the time the second half rolled around, we weren't even really trying to pass. It was just more sort of Lime Grover's, you know, RUTM, run up the middle, bleed the clock out type strategy when you're up by 34 points. Something that I don't necessarily disagree with. I mean, by Bill Connolly, Football Outsider, statistical purposes, any lead of over 16 points in the second half is not considered a close game. So I think all but the five or six plays in the second half were under not close circumstances. So again, your behavior is going to change when you're up by that much. Yeah, I'm sure the coaching staff is going to be a little bit upset that they gave up all those points, but really, did it affect the outcome of the game at all? No. I don't think that people should be all that concerned about what the defense was doing when they were up 44-7. Now, getting to Philip here, so Mankato Jesus really, I mean, I can't say enough about his poise and his just general awareness as a quarterback. I mean, the thing that you noticed most about Philip is that he is a quarterback in the truest sense of the word. He's not a thrower, he's not an athlete playing quarterback, and he's not just a guy with a really big arm. He can make all the throws, but his decision-making and just the way that he sees the field and can set up defense is just superb. I mean, the best example that I can think about it in the context of Lime Grover's offense is when he kept handing the ball off on those zone reads. So he kept handing the ball off to Kirkwood, handed the ball off to Kirkwood like three or four times in a row, and then he just kept setting up the defensive end to bite on the inside, and then the one time they really needed the critical third down conversion, Nelson kept it, the entire Purdue defense was fooled, and he scrambled for about 34 yards, then got down into field goal range to put the Gophers up. I think that was when we went up 34-7. So at that point, I sort of got the idea that, you know, wow, this... We not only have a quarterback, but I can't even tell you that how good Philip Nelson could potentially be if, as you said, this offensive line starts coming together, starts gelling, and you know we bring like every single one of those guys into next year, and they can continue to improve. Our running backs continue to improve. Our tight ends. Our young tight end, it's Goodyear and Plesic, continue to improve. Our wide receiving core continues to improve. I think we've got a lot of good things, a lot of good key components of this offense that are going to return next year and really build towards the future, but we're seeing a lot of that now. And defensively, I mean, what else could you say about the fact that Michael Carter was just outstanding? I have literally never seen a player completely dominate an opposing offense on consecutive plays for one series like Michael Carter did. I've never seen, I mean, you could talk about guys like Jadeveon Clowney and Willie VanDesteeg or any number of big-time All-American-type defensive players, and I just have never seen it, ever. And it's once again, that's sort of like the biggest indicator, again, or like the kind of the apex of what is I would say, extremely good Minnesota passing defense. This is a defense that it's very difficult to pass on. The only way that you're going to get passing yards off of them, everything is going to be contested. Like, we saw the one really, 30-yard pass that Turbush completed in the first half, but that was a hell of a throw and catch. That's basically the only way that you can complete big passes against this team. Otherwise, it's going to have to be really short passes. And if you have to try and set up long passes, this defensive line is going to get after you. So I'm beyond impressed by how this passing defense has transformed from the complete sieve where teams would just simply bomb on us all the time to a unit that I legitimately feel has two all Big Ten players in it, and Carter especially has to be a first-team all Big Ten.
So we talked about this in the 35 seconds of prep that we did before today's podcast, but I think it's worth mentioning for those folks who don't maybe get out to the CFB stats site very often. Where is the Gophers pass defense ranked nationally right now?
What kind of splits do you want? Do you want it based upon against FBS opponents?
Yeah, let's go against FBS opponents, because okay. Screw the FCS.
Okay, so against FBS opponents only, Minnesota's yards per attempt allowed is fourth in the country, tied with guess which team, Frothy?
Michigan.
No, not Michigan.
Ohio State.
Nope, not Ohio State.
USC.
Nope, USC's defense kind of sucks this year.
Huh. I don't know who.
It would be Alabama.
Ho, ho, ho!
Alabama and Minnesota are tied for fourth in the nation in yards per attempt allowed at 5.2. The only passing defenses ahead of them are Florida State, LSU, and Arizona State. Now, if you go by passer rating allowed, Alabama is number one because they have 14 interceptions. But Minnesota, even then, is ninth. So almost by any metric you want to look at, Minnesota's passing defense is in the top 10 of almost every single one of them, maybe other than interceptions. But there have been so many near interceptions from this team that it just shows and underscores an even bigger point, that this passing defense is completely transformed. It's very difficult to pass, and if you're going to move the ball in big chunks of yards against this defense, it's probably a lot easier to do it against the run than it is against the pass. Because if you try and air it out against this defense, you're going to be in for a really long day. Because you're going to get put on, Michael Carter Island, and he's going to completely shut you down. I mean, he's now second in the Big Ten in passes defended. I mean, and when you have a six pass breakup day and a pick six, I mean, you're putting yourself in the conversation for one of the best all-around performances of the season.
Yeah, it's the first time a Gopher defensive back has had six pass breakups since 2001.
Yes.
So 11 years since that happened. So, and there wasn't a pick six in that game to my recollection. So yeah, it's a pretty good day by Michael Carter. Now, the obvious counter to the Gophers have a borderline elite pass defense is that teams really don't need to pass against us because we're kind of a sieve on the run. But, in years past, we've been a sieve on the run and a sieve on the pass. So I think that this is pretty big progress. And yeah, the run, I have to admit, after I arrived at the game just before kickoff, ball gets kicked off, we go three and out, 16-yard punt back to Purdue. Second play that Purdue has the ball, they bust off a 40-yard run. And I may have tweeted, just embarrassing. And then the Gophers spent the remaining part of the half just shoving that down my throat. So I'm glad they made me eat the Twitter crow. But the run defense was a big concern going into the game. And that first drive notwithstanding, for the rest of the half, Purdue wasn't able to do anything. In the second half, Purdue was playing catch up and we're trying to pass the ball more. That's really where we started to see Michael Carter stand out. Troy Studemeier really had an opportunity for two interceptions, one of which was a borderline call that got overturned. The other one was taken back on a penalty. But our cornerbacks are as good as I've seen. And considering how young the safeties are, I think we're in great, great shape. I saw Demaryius Travis get out there playing safety at a cover one a couple of times yesterday. Played a real nice cover on a slant route that looked like it was going to be open. He came underneath and kept Turbrush from making the pass. But defensively, against the pass, I think we're in great shape. I still have some concerns against the run. I think we still gave up some pretty big runs yesterday, but I think we had largely taken the foot off the gas. I saw Eric Jock get in there for a few plays at defensive tackle. I don't recall seeing him out there earlier in the season. So we were doing probably a little bit more rotating than we had done. Frankly, I think we were playing also a pretty tight pass coverage as well. I think we'd switched to a nickel quite a bit, which is going to open up the run. I think Purdue finished the game at about 5.4 yards per rush, which, given what we had seen over the last couple of weeks, I'm pretty satisfied with. So I think there's still an open question about it, but let's not absolutely say that we have a borderline elite pass defense, given the fact that teams don't have to pass against us, because I think we are moving in the right direction, the Wisconsin game notwithstanding, and we've shown that we can stop the run. I think we have to show that we can consistently stop the run, and I think we have the personnel to do it. It just comes down to execution. So we'll see what happens against Michigan. But again, I think we're moving in the right direction. But I think you hit on the two major impact players yesterday. I think Philip Nelson was terrific. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. He's a young guy. He's going to be inconsistent. So yesterday, I don't know, is necessarily going to be representative of his entire career here at the U. It will probably be a letdown game or two, and that's okay. We have to be prepared for that. But the future certainly looks bright. Yeah. And I think this was a terrific time for him to come out a little bit. He throws a beautiful ball. That pass to Barker, I think it was Barker on the sidelines. It could have been Engel, I don't recall. That pass to one of our white speed receivers on the sidelines was absolutely perfectly placed. And going 11 of 12 in that stretch there, where we really blew the game wide open, is not something that I've seen. It really, the last great quarterback performance we saw was probably Adam Weber against Michigan State for that crazy Halloween game. Yeah. And I'd put that game right up there with that. And considering the fact that Mankato Jesus is a true freshman, there's nothing but upside at this point. The only question now is he going to go pro before his senior season? But we'll worry about that in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think most of all, I'm excited to see just where the Nelson era of Minnesota quarterbacking will go. I mean, is it going to be the case where he's going to shatter all of Adam Weber's records? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, if he obviously, if you take the two small sample size data points and extrapolate it out, then yes. But no, I mean, he's obviously going to play better teams starting this Saturday against Michigan, and he's going to maybe have to. I mean, I think that he's shown. We were encouraged by everything that he did during the Wisconsin game. I thought. You and I both had the opinion that, okay, yeah, he showed really good things. And given the circumstances, we thought he did reasonably well, considering how difficult an environment Camp Randall is. But then to come home and essentially just bomb on Purdue for 30 minutes and then just start handing the ball off for the next 30. I mean, there's really not much more you could ask out of a quarterback, senior or true freshman otherwise. So this is going to be fun. To your point, yes, there are going to be some letdowns and some up and down games for Nelson. Everything's not going to be just as easy as it was against Purdue, who a team that was in an equally desperate situation that we were. But as you mentioned before, I was sort of had this, I sort of had this thing sticking in the back of my head that, you know, I really don't think Purdue is going to want to come in and play this game. I mean, don't take this the wrong way, Gopher fans, but I don't think a team that's desperate really gets up to come to Minneapolis and play the Gophers, especially when it's 42 degrees out and you've just completely blown your wad against Ohio State in a game that you should have won but ended up losing, and then you got killed the previous two games.
So yeah, I mean, who gets up to play the Gophers? North Dakota State, right, gets up to play the Gophers. The South Dakota teams get up to play the Gophers. This year got up to play the Gophers, but the number of teams that are going to really get juiced up to play the Gophers in the FBS side is pretty limited, I think.
Yeah, so that simply is what it is. I mean, that's why. But again, that's fine. If teams want to overlook us and not really get up to play and not play hard and not play with the amount of intensity that they're going to need to play, that's fine with me because they're going to lose. I mean, we're seeing the foundations of a well-coached team that is taking their cues from their head coach, and it's all about execution, toughness, and getting playing hard. And the ultimate example of that is Kansas State. I mean, Kansas State is probably the team that plays harder than anyone, harder and smarter than any team in the country, and look at where they're at right now. And that's sort of been the hallmark of a kill coach team every step that he's been, and we're starting to see that change. I think somebody mentioned that, I think one of Kill's former players at Southern Illinois came up to him in the last 2 weeks and said, you know, there's going to be this one game where things are going to start to turn around. And nobody will really know it at the time, but 2 or 3 years down the road, people will be able to point to that game and say, okay, yeah, that's when things really started to change. And that's when we really started to see the foundation of a good team. And I don't know if this Purdue game is that point. It is that particular game at this point, because obviously we have no idea how the rest of the season is going to pan out. But I do think that in the context of everything that had gone on this particular season, that the outcome of this Purdue game was as good a win as you could have hoped for.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So let's think about that and build on that for a second. Yesterday, I think particularly in the first half, was as good of a performance as I've seen from the Gophers in a long, long time against a Big Ten team. It's really the first blowout win that I can recall since against a Big Ten team since what? Probably Indiana a few years ago?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago, maybe? So yeah, I think that's great.
Maybe if you want to consider the Purdue game 2009, if you consider that to be a blowout, that's probably the one game.
Okay, yeah, good. So, yeah, yesterday was a good win. I think you're right about the Purdue game in 2009 being the last quote-unquote blowout that we saw, though I think this game yesterday was even more in hand than that one was. And you talked a little bit about how a couple of years down the road we may look at this as a turning point game, though there really is no way to know that at this point. So have we crossed the Rubicon, so to speak? Are we now past – is this a trend that we're going to start seeing where the offense is executing much better? The last three games we scored 13 points a game on average, or maybe 13 points a game specifically, I think, as it turned out. Yesterday we bust out with 44 points. Certainly some of that had something to do with Purdue. They were absolutely set for a devastating loss. Teams don't get up to play Minnesota, so you've got to take that into account. But in reality, I think it came down a lot more to our ability to execute, our ability to make passes down the field, the offensive line being able to open up holes for Kirkwood and Nugget in the fourth quarter to kill clock. I think that had a lot more to do with the game turning into a blowout than Purdue's disinterest in the game and low morale. So have we now reached a point where we're going to start seeing incremental improvements every game? Or it was this game a bit of an aberration and we can now expect to resume the trajectory that the season had been on in the previous three games? What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, I think I think one thing that made a big difference in this particular game was the offensive line was a little bit healthier in this particular game than they had been in the previous few weeks. Making the move to put Epping over at left guard and then move Christensen back to his more natural spot at center, that paid huge dividends. I mean, you could see, if you see the replay, you're going to notice Epping making a lot of very good blocks from the left guard spot. I think he, on one of Nugget's bigger runs, he blocked two people on one play, which is outstanding. And then I think he pancaked the dude on Nugget's touchdown run. But that's sort of what I'm beginning to see. The offensive line has been so banged up, and there's been so little continuity there, that just getting the right pieces in place up front has been fairly critical in improving the running game. And I think a huge part of this, too, is just the offense has more balance, and I think has more of a flow and a rhythm to it. When you're able to convert on sort of third, you're able to convert on third downs, and you're able to sort of keep the chains moving and get the sort of yardage you need on first and second down, so you're in these third and manageable situations, you have a lot better, you're more efficient offense, and you have more opportunities to convert on third down than we have seen in the past couple of weeks. So that's a good sign. And I also think that Nelson just, I don't know, he just is the perfect mix of what we thought we were getting in Max and then what we thought we were getting in Gray. So obviously their skill sets were diametrically opposed to one another, but Nelson is the combination of both of them, and I would argue that he's not the runner that Gray is, but he's a better runner than Shortell, and he's actually a better passer than Shortell, even though he doesn't necessarily have the arm strength. So that's one of those things where he presents a lot of different challenges to the defense, especially with how quick the ball comes out of his hand. And the fact that he just has better accuracy than any of the other quarterbacks really puts a lot of pressure on the defense. So is this something that we're going to see moving forward? Well, I don't know. I mean, we're playing three of the toughest defenses in the conference in the next 4 weeks. I mean, Michigan is a very tough defense. Nebraska has a tough defense, and we're playing them in Lincoln, so that's obviously going to be a huge challenge. And then Michigan State, say what you will about their offense, but their defense is outstanding, and they limited Wisconsin's running game, which had been averaging 400 yards a game over the last three Big Ten games, to basically nothing. So that's going to be a unique set of challenges. I don't necessarily know that we're going to be able to say, okay, we can flip the switch and things are going to improve incrementally the next couple of weeks up until we get to bowl eligibility. I do think that we are going to see more struggles out of the offense simply because the level of competition is going to rise.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think we're due for maybe a dumpster fire game because I don't necessarily know that we've seen a full dumpster fire game this year. Certainly the first quarter and a few minutes of the second quarter against Iowa were an absolute unmitigated dumpster fire, and the third going into the fourth quarter at Madison were a grease fire that couldn't be stopped with all the baking soda in the world. So I think I'm most concerned about the Michigan and Nebraska games. I think we'll have a lot better indication about what this team is capable of after the Michigan game, but I liked what I saw. I think that certainly that was their, on both the offense and defensive sides of the ball, it was their best, most comprehensive game I think we've seen this year against an FBS opponent. I don't really count New Hampshire quite as much because that was a game where we should have won pretty handily. But I think we saw some defensive breakdowns or offensive breakdowns against both UNLV and Western Michigan. Syracuse, I think we were great defensively, but pretty limited in what we could do offensively. Iowa wasn't great in the first half on both offense and defense. Defense really stepped it up in the second half. Northwestern had some breakdowns both offensively and defensively in the first half, and we were never really able to get much of a rhythm offensively. Wisconsin, offense never got in rhythm. Defense played well in the first half, but not in the second half. Yesterday, I think we saw really good execution on both sides. The extent to which we're able to keep that up week to week from here on out with as young of a team as we have, and we are a young team despite the fact that we have more seniors than Wisconsin does. If you look at our roster, I think it was 29 of the 50-some players are either redshirt of the players on the two deeps were either redshirt sophomores or younger. That's really the important part, is looking at the total number of upperclassmen, not just seniors that are in the two deeps. We're a very, very young team, and young teams, I think the most difficult thing to do is execute consistently week after week. So I just don't know that we'll be able to do that consistently for the remaining four Big Ten conference games. Hopefully we're able to avoid the tire fire in the backyard that is on top of a coal mine and starts to land on fire for millennia. But my thought here is that we probably won't see the consistent level of execution on both offense and defense in maybe any game left this year. Certainly hope that I'm wrong, but I think that we were really firing on all cylinders, particularly in the first half yesterday, and that's not something that I'm sure we'll be able to do given the youth of the team. I think it totally depends, though. I think it absolutely depends, and I'll know a lot more about that after the Michigan game. This is a big game for us. I think it's a fairly important game for Michigan, as it turns out, as well. They got beat pretty handily last night in Nebraska. So Nebraska is not really in control of the conference, but they have some challenging games coming up. So I'm really, really interested to see what Michigan team shows up and how we respond given the big win that we had this week. I think the big news going into the Michigan game is whether or not Denard Robinson plays. He, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, has a nerve issue with his elbow that he injured originally in the Illinois game and then aggravated last night in the Nebraska game and wasn't able to come back in because he couldn't grip a football. So I think the big question is going to be, is he going to be able to recover in time for the game next week against the Gophers? Brady Hoke said that the major thing that it needed was just time to heal. So my thought is that he is such a dynamic player with his feet and competent, maybe passing the ball, but he's so good on his feet, and our susceptibility to the major backbreaking run is high to very high. So his ability to play in that game is going to make a major difference about whether we have a realistic shot to win. Going into the last several weeks, my thought was that's an almost guaranteed loss. I would have given us about a 5% chance, maybe a little bit less, of winning that game. If Robinson doesn't play, it doesn't go up significantly, but it probably goes up to a 10 to 15% chance of winning the game. I think they're just more talented than we are at this stage, and that's a lot for us to overcome. With that said, though, I think if he doesn't play, their backup quarterback, really, Russell Bellamy really didn't show very much last night. I think he had 3 completed passes for 35 yards and 3 interceptions or something like that. So
yeah, it was ugly.
Yeah, there's a chance for us. And my thoughts are is we're going to absolutely stack the box, leave Studemeier and Carter out on their islands and make sure that Michigan can't run the ball, because with Bellamy in there, there really isn't going to be, I don't think we have a lot to worry about. So My thoughts are is we're probably still going to lose that game unless we execute as well as we did in the first half yesterday. But if Robinson is out, I think it becomes an awful lot more interesting than it otherwise would be.
Yeah. So Michigan is going to be a very tough matchup for us because they are strong in all facets on defense, and they believe that heading into the Nebraska game, they were actually the leading defense in the conference in terms of both total defense and in terms of points allowed. So they are very solid. Yeah, I'm looking at CFP stats now. They're allowing only 4 yards per play on defense in conference play, which is just outstanding. But so that's going to be a huge test for Nelson. And really, the only indicator that's pointing in our favor on this is that it's going to be at home, and Robinson might not play. And then, so Russell Bellamy, being a not very good backup quarterback, might give the Gophers a chance to sort of keep this game a little bit closer. But you're right. I think that, again, the Michigan is more talented. They have the better offensive line than we do. They have, I wouldn't say that they have better receivers, but we wouldn't necessarily know because Robinson and Bellamy can't hit either of those guys, can't hit any of their receivers. Their running game outside of Denard is pretty solid. But this, again, the strength of that team is their defense, and I think it's going to be very difficult for a team that, like Minnesota, who has really struggled to establish the run against the better opponents this season, to do so against one of the better defenses in the conference. I know that we did relatively well against Purdue yesterday, but consider the fact that Purdue is the second worst run defense in the conference behind us. So that really doesn't tell me a whole lot of anything. Now, will Nelson be able to get off the amount of passes and just easy pitch and catch touchdowns like he did against Purdue? I doubt it. I don't think that they're going to be I don't think Michigan's corners are going to bite on slant and goes like Purdue's will. And at the same time, I think it's going to be we're going to have to see Nelson really try and manage the game and take what the defense gives him. Quarterbacking cliches galore in order to keep this game close. So again, this is going to have to be a perfectly executed game, no turnovers, hopefully force a couple of turnovers, maybe get a big play on special teams or another pick six or fumble recovery, that sort of thing, in order for us to have a realistic chance in this game. I mean, obviously anything can happen in college football, but there's a reason why we haven't done well against Michigan historically.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we've got a shot here, but I'm not terribly optimistic. That is nothing against the program. I think Michigan is just in a different place than we are right now. Maybe a couple of years down the road when we're a little bit older, have more experience, and we're not trotting out a true freshman quarterback, we're trotting out a true junior quarterback, we'll have a better chance to win. It's not to say that Michigan's invincible, because they're not. And as you say, anything can happen in college football, and they may just come out and have a bad game. I remember the game that we played in 2009 against Michigan, when I think it was Rich Rod's last year at the Dome, and I was absolutely convinced that we were going to win the game and we were going to take the jug back. Michigan was really heading into the pits of damnation at that point. We were still, we hadn't seen the 55 donut against Iowa yet. We were still, I think, probably 7-3, maybe 7-4, lost a couple of games, but we were still in pretty good, we were still in a pretty good place.
That was right after Decker got hurt against Northwestern and we lost on the last second pick six.
Yep, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. But still, Michigan had been awful and I thought we were doing pretty well. And was absolutely convinced that we were going to win that game. There were no indications that we weren't the superior team at that point. And then what did we do? We came out absolutely flat and ended up just getting manhandled by Michigan. The same thing could happen this week. If Robinson is hurt, they come off a tough loss against Nebraska at Nebraska. They're no longer nationally ranked. There's a chance that we could potentially come out hot. We're feeling pretty good after a big win against Purdue. They're coming out feeling down on themselves after the loss against Nebraska. There's a chance, but I think it's a pretty small chance. If I were a betting man, I wouldn't be putting a ton of money on the Gophers at this point. But what sort of effect do you think that Robinson has on the line? I guess I was talking to someone earlier today where I figured that Robinson would probably have a 7-10 point effect on where the line comes out. So if Robinson were completely healthy, Michigan probably comes out 17-21 point favorites. If Robinson is out, I think that line maybe goes down to 10-14. And I think he 7-10 points is about what I think he's worth. Could even be more than that, given the Gophers' struggles against the run. How do you think this affects the line? Have you done any modeling with or without Robinson in there to give us an indication about where that line might come out?
No, I haven't done individual player stuff yet. But if I had to guess, it would probably be in the range that you're talking about. I think it'll be a 12-14 point spread with Robinson, and then probably around a 7-9 spread without him. But even if he can't pass, if all he does is run and hand the ball off, I still think that probably could be good for I think that he could be able to score 20. Michigan could score 24 to 28 points doing that alone, and I think that would be enough to beat the Gophers, because I don't see how we're going to be able to score more than 17 points in this game. I mean, I'm not trying to sandbag us, but Michigan is a very, very good defense, and this is a very tall order for Nelson.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. We're you know, you'd think after absolutely crushing another Big Ten team by, you know, as badly as we did, the final score notwithstanding, it would be a little bit more confident going into a game against a strong defense, pretty weak offensive Michigan team. You'd think we'd be a little bit more positive, but it is what it is. I'd love to be wrong, and I will happily come on here and pull a mea culpa and seppuku myself right on a live podcast if we end up winning the game. But I'm not terribly confident we're going to come out with a W here. I think we'll need to find that sixth win in the last two games of the season at Illinois and at home against Michigan State.
Yeah, that Illinois and Michigan State game are where we should be looking at. I mean, because as good of a – so Michigan and Michigan State probably have comparable defensive strengths, but Michigan State's offense is tire fire. And that could be a game that late in the season where if Michigan State has really – I mean, if they're not playing for a conference championship and they're pretty much slotted, then, again, it's the old adage of who wants to come play the Minnesota in the final game of the season when it's 20 degrees outside Minneapolis. So, I mean, that could very well play in our favor.
Well, I'll keep sacrificing goats and praying to Joe Boo that's the case, because it would be, again, I think it's more important than anything that we get that sixth win, and hell, I'll even take a seventh win.
Yeah, I'll take it too. All right, folks, that concludes it for this week in the FBT podcast. If we do end up taking the Little Brown Jug, we, Frothy and I, are going to pour all of the Pappy Van Winkle into it and trot it around Dinkytown drinking merrily.
What is that, about 140 ounces it holds in there? That's probably about $2,000 worth of Pappy, huh?
Yeah, it'd be well worth it.
It absolutely would. We'll let Ramsey Nasrallah know so he can join us in a Pappy game.
Oh, that would be the ultimate situational bourbon.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later.
All right. See ya.